We're going to be looking at these verses that were just read to us in some detail. And as we kind of begin to look at what we're going to be talking about this evening, and the title of the lesson is Growing Old Gracefully. And I suspect that perhaps from that perspective, there might be some who think, well, that's not really applicable to me, that I don't really need to give much consideration or much thought to this idea of what's going to be talked about this evening. It might have the tendency to tune out, but let me suggest to you that it'll be beneficial to all of us. In fact, a goodly amount of things we'll be taking note of has to do with the early part of life and things that have to do with preparation toward this ultimate end, toward what's going to be transpiring later in life. So this idea of growing old gracefully. In fact, it's somewhat talking about being old is somewhat relative. For example, if I were to talk to somebody who's in their 90s, they might not consider me particularly a person that would be old or aged. And then you might have the situation where, of course, someone might begin in their life and look and start talking about things that I might consider to be somewhat younger, for example. Just the other day, I heard somebody who said they were 35 and feeling pretty old. You know, and, you know, the aches, pains, and there's some thought to that. I kind of, after that, was considering when I was 35 and how I felt about that at that point in time. But I've been so long ago, I couldn't remember. So we kind of moved forward on that type of situation. But the fact is, aging is part of life. If we're going to go along at some point in time, we're going to begin to notice changes. And those changes are part of what occurs, inevitably. One time was telling Nancy, I said, you know, I've got to the point, I decided I'm not going to have any more birthdays. And I do remember this, that was about 40. So for perspective there. And she said, I'm sorry to hear that. I was hoping to keep you around a little longer. Because that's the alternative, isn't it? To growing old. And so the question is not whether we grow older. If we live, our lives go along. The question is, how are we going to deal with that? What is going to be our perspective? And the scriptures provide us with things associated with that. The idea of aging gracefully, then, is going to be noted, growing old gracefully. Let me notice some things about this. What the figures represent. You'll notice this is very poetic language. It falls into that area for poetic language or wisdom language that you have here that includes Job and Psalms and Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. Of course, we find that it was Solomon who, as he's referred to as the preacher at the very outset of Ecclesiastes, this very wise man who is going to address a whole host of matters. But the principal thought that he has is he's looking back in his life as he is older, that he begins to reflect upon the situation and circumstance of which he has reviewed life from that looking back, and he thinks about all and describes all the things he was able to engage in. And there was many things that he enjoyed because of his wisdom, his wealth, his prominence, his position. And as a result, he experienced all kinds of things. And he kind of was trying to evaluate what's really life all about. And so there were certainly things that said, you know, to enjoy life. We'll see that that's part of it, to enjoy things that are provided for us, that there's a purpose behind it, but that we need to keep it in a perspective. And that when you look at everything and all these pursuits, it's vanity, it's like grasping for the wind. There's always going to be certain things that are falling shorter as a result of that. And so as we look then at the 12th chapter, the start of the 12th chapter, it talks about remember God in the days of your youth. And then verse 2, the latter part of the first verse says, as the years draw near when you say I have no pleasure in them. And of course, this is talking about these difficult years, these hard, trying times as one gets older. The vitality of youth is gone. And that's kind of the first part of the imagery is generic in nature. Sort of gives an overview of this idea. Where it talks about, you know, I have no pleasure in them while the sun, the light, the moon, the stars are darkened, the clouds do not return after the rain. And this is very poetic language. So we kind of delve into it and trying to wrestle a little bit with what's under consideration here. And the idea is that the darkening of these time periods and where you have the refreshing element where one goes through and you have the rains and everything, but the sun comes out and it comes back full cycle, Well, those times begin to vanish, and the darkness creeps in. And there's not then those instances which begin to shrink more and more, where you have that which is enjoyable in life, because there are things that start happening physically that take away from you those aspects. And so when we look a little further, and this now kind of concentrating upon this other part here, beginning in verse 3, this language, again, is very interesting, and it's poetic, it's figurative. And so if we start looking at this, the keepers of the house tremble, the arms weaken. The strong men bow down, the legs become frail. Now, we could sort of begin to see the imagery, and we can relate to it. Various ones of us can be appreciative of it more so than others. We certainly see it with those around about us. We see the frailty developing. We see the challenges. Again, start experiencing some ourselves. Circumstances involved with it. The grinders cease because there are few. The teeth fall out. You start losing those things that the age of one is beginning to be seen. Those that look through windows grow dim. The eyes lose their sight. The doors are shut in the streets. The ears become hard of hearing. There's challenges, and I can relate to a number of aspects. You know, different people have different things they have to deal with. But background noise is more become an issue with me, and sometimes like teaching class or things in places where I could previously had a pretty good concentration here. All that background noise was kind of close. Pretty soon it starts to interfere, and I'm having trouble a little bit more hearing those that I'm trying to concentrate upon. Yeah, sometimes it's subtle. It takes a while before you start noticing some of those elements. It sort of is a situation which kind of over time begins to become more apparent. The sound of the grinding is low. The mouth and speech become unintelligible. When one rises up at the sound of a bird, the elder is easily awakened. You find yourself some things, you know, just noises, things kind of awaken one. Kind of the deep sleep seems to be lessened. Situations kind of wake us up more readily. All the daughters of music are brought low. The voice are no longer able to produce music. It begins to weaken the vocal cords and things of this nature. Again, you start observing some elements of this. Now, I will say that we're blessed in a time in which there's a lot of medical help that's given to us. There are things we can do to not only extend our lives because of medical science, but also make our lives better for a lengthier period of time. The enjoyment of life can be extended as a result of that. But it's not going to preclude these things from occurring. And over time, the technology simply cannot keep up. No matter how good it is, no matter how developed it becomes. They're afraid of height. They're fear of falling. I don't like to get up above a certain level anymore. I didn't used to have an issue with the idea of getting up and going about and doing things. And some people have more of a concern about that just as a natural course of events. But I didn't used to have that much of an issue with it. But now I feel like things just aren't as balanced and don't feel as secure. And the terrors and of terrors in the way, no longer feeling invincible. Yeah, I think that's one thing we begin to do. That's a lot of mentality, but the mentality comes as a result of certain realizations of the physical body and things that are occurring with the physical body. You don't feel invincible. That's not necessarily a bad thing, by the way. It's sort of a reality, but it's not necessarily a bad thing because we seem to or should take stock sometimes about our own invincibility so that we can rely upon the Lord in our lives anyway. When the almond tree blossoms, the wakefulness of old age setting in. The grasshopper is a bird, an old man bowed down like an insect, able to move only with some difficulty. And all these things, you know, you can look at various places, and there's pretty much a consistency. Some of these are maybe a little bit more debated as far as what they might consist of, but I think this is fairly representative, and it's certainly something very easily related to as far as our own personal experiences, perhaps, in some instances, or seeing others that are going through challenging times. And so looking at a number of these different
ones who have examined these words, phrases, and kind of trying to relate them to what the subject matter under consideration is, this is pretty much the approach that's taken, I believe, correctly so. Because again, it's taking this prospect of where you are at one point in life and now where you're going to be, and an awareness of down the stream of time, what that's going to mean to people. So the desire fails, fleshly desires wane. For man goes to his eternal home and the mourners go about their streets, an obvious reference to death. That the ultimate outcome and the end result is going to be death. The remaining figures alluding to decay of the body. So there's a number of references here. Again, very figurative in nature. Gives us that's been read. So here's some thoughts associated with this. Again, I think that it's an accurate depiction. If it's not the exact thing, when different ones have tried to analyze it, it certainly captures the essence of the point. Before the loose cord, the spinal cord is loosed. The golden bowl, the skull, is broken. The picture, the heart, shattered at the fountain. The will, the pelvis, broken at the well. Now, I picked this up off executableoutlines.com. This is some material, that part of a particular lesson that was looking at these verses. And taking those things and comparing them with others, I think it's a fair representation of what's described here. But in order for us to appreciate it, we have to kind of analyze or assess what these verses refer to. And then capture the overall idea of the aging process and what it does to us and what it takes from us. And what the consequences are. Of course, we sort of understand the backdrop behind all of this. The reason death is the inevitable thing in situations go back all the way to Genesis chapter 3. What God had made good, created all things wonderful, blissful. There was no death that existed prior to the sin that entered the scene. Man sinned. Then you had immediate spiritual death. And then that followed with physical death. Physical death, they're expelled from the garden. They can't come back to either the tree of life. And it's a beautiful scene, by the way, as we think about the tree of life and places in Scripture from that point forward. The tree of life takes on a symbolism that ultimately the tree of life is going to be available once again, not in the literal sense, the figurative manner in which it's portrayed in heaven, where there will be no more death and no more decay. But that's the end result. And so the wise man is looking back, and that's kind of, you know, starting where he begins. With looking at all the aspects of life and all the different pursuits and the multiple ways in which he tried to find some degree of satisfaction and meaning to life. And so he kind of looks at various aspects of that. And that's what the book of Ecclesiastes is all about. And after each one of those points and sections that he comes to, while there may be value and there was something beneficial from it, it was always failing to ultimately live up to a point of saying, you know, I've got to the end there. I found the essence of what life is all about. He looked back and it's very depressing at that point as you go through. It's very depressing to think about everything in life and especially somebody like Solomon when you consider everything he accomplished. And you start reading back in the historical accounts of the scriptures that you look at. And they talk about what Solomon was able to do, the expanse of the kingdom. When you look at the trade that he engaged in, the building programs that he oversaw, his great wisdom in all these different areas, his wealth. He was involved. He had many different interests for a person like him, as intellectual as he was, and the wisdom that he had, given by God, that he requested. He was able to accomplish many things. And he looks at it and goes, well, yeah, I did that, but yeah, what's missing? What's lacking? What else is needed? And you know, think about, well, what's success? Define success. Well, the world looked at Solomon, and he was standing out as one of the most successful people that ever walked the face of the earth in every way, administratively. The things that he did as far as his going about governing, when we look at the expanse that he had of trade and all the different ones that he had these good relationships with. He was at peace. Of course, all those things were given to him by God because he asked for wisdom to, in order to be able to take and then go about effectively and rightly being one that judged his people. And that was really the thing. He said, I'm young. I need help. Which itself was a wise thing. And so he asked God for wisdom. God said, because you didn't ask for these other things, I'm going to give you wealth and I'm going to give you. And then where you're at peace with your neighbors. So his peaceful reign and the extent of it, really quite impressive from that standpoint. Of course, we also see that just being wise is not going to also preclude one from being foolish. And Solomon did follow a pursuit, having kind of forgotten about God and marrying these foreign women. They led him astray. He allowed them to begin to worship their gods and idols. And so one of the things that we learn from Solomon is that wisdom that's not applied correctly or fails to take God into account is going to be devastating. It's going to result in circumstances that are going to put us in peril spiritually. Well, those things are all set there, and that's kind of the groundwork that's laid. Now he comes to the end, and he's looking back in essence and saying, I'm looking at all these things, and here we're the reality of physical ailments, aging, and challenges of life are there. And so now what? So he's going to give some advice, and he's going to give counsel, and he's going to do so, again, from inspired means. This is not just Solomon speaking. Solomon's wisdom coming from God. When Solomon, we have the problems. Solomon expressed these things, but who gave him this? Well, it was God. So what we have here is a revelation that helps us with understanding some very practical things of life. Now, with those things in mind, then, what's some of these things that enable us to be prepared rightly, to age gracefully, to grow in this right manner? Well, first thing, and it gets back to this idea we've talked about the young, living right in one's youth. So you start looking, what is the beginning point of what Solomon is talking about here? What does he describe? What is involved in this? Well, we already looked at verse 1 of the 12th chapter, and he talks about youth and what the youth is supposed to do, but he back up to the 11th chapter. In the 11th chapter, there's certainly a number of things that are said forth, but looking specifically, beginning with verse 9, it says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and yet your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these God will bring you into judgment." Now, there's not saying that there's not things that are, you know, being happy and joyous and enjoying the things of youth. That's fine. That's all well and good. In fact, one of the things you find in the context of Ecclesiastes is that in other places of the wisdom literature and Solomon's state, you know, enjoying life is part of what the Lord would want for us. But it has to be also understood in light of what it constitutes being right. To enjoy life correctly, what the Lord has given us in the things that we can have that brings pleasure, as long as pleasure is right and proper in and of itself, then that's fine. And as long as it's also kept in the perspective of what things we do and how we assess life and our priorities of life. So he looks at that part of it and it reminds, okay, just remember that there's going to be an aspect there about the judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart, put away evil from your flesh. Remove those things that hinder this, that are going to be destructive and detrimental. If you're going to look toward getting to the end, you need to think about it from the very early on, because the earlier one looks and thinks in terms of what's right and living rightly, then that is preparation for the end. And the end including going through these challenges of life, the circumstances of being aging in life. You know, we think about wasting it and using it wrongfully and regret that's attached to the youth in situations. And so I might make an observation here. There are individuals who certainly we're not aware of
and live a life because they don't know the Lord, have followed after the teaching of the Lord, and later in life they come to the Lord and have regrets about their earlier life. And we understand the situation. But my point is to those of us in circumstances where we've been introduced and where we have the opportunity, what a blessing it is to have godly parents who want their children to know what's right, to help raise them rightly, to bring them into a setting in which they can learn that, because at the very outset, they're going to have a lot of advantages preparing themselves to the time period. And others coming to the Lord, at whatever point you come to the Lord, that's a wonderful thing because the Lord wants us to come to Him. He wants us to be obedient to Him. He's made those provisions the way we are through the Lord, through Jesus Christ coming and dying for us. So I in no way am trying to preclude this being part of it. We've come in contact with people. We want to encourage you for that. But when you have the youth and instilling these things in one at a very tender, early age is the point that we see here. What a wonderful thing. You think about, well, going ahead and finishing out what we see here, for childhood and youth are vanity. And so he, again, points out there's going to be an element of this that we see. It's all, again, talked about in the concept of what's the ultimate outcome and the ultimate purpose. And then, of course, we've already noted the first verse of the 12th chapter, which is continuation. Remember now your God in the days of your youth. Before these other things we're talking about. Think about Daniel, and you can think about others as well, but just Daniel, as a teenager, he's taken and uprooted from his home, taken to a foreign land. He's in Babylon. He's put in this setting in which he and his friends, coming from Jerusalem, being taken as Jerusalem had been defeated by the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar. He's now going to be used because he has some talents that are observable, and they're going to then develop him as well as the others in order to help minister this nation, the conquests that were made. And so they were very quick to try to take what advantages they had in those that they conquered to help with doing the things that Babylon was desirous of being able to accomplish in ministering all these things that are going on. And so Daniel had made, though he purposed his heart not to defile, he purposed in his heart to serve the Lord. He purposed in his heart from that tender age that he was going to live rightly. And one of the things, just projecting down the stream of time, there are these accounts that we have of Daniel and then some things of others that are inserted in there somewhat. They're just a few chapters, the first few chapters that actually are the historical part of it. The latter part deals with visions. And it's a fascinating study to think about the visions of Daniel and what they mean. And Daniel giving these insights that then are recorded for us and having to do with the history of the nation and the events associated with that on down further. But there's just a few accounts of things going on. But the one consistency is Daniel was always faithful to the Lord. And as a very young person, he lived on up into age where he had gone across the entire spectrum of this period. And his faithfulness early enabled him to be prepared to be faithful when he was older. And that's the lesson, that's the point, and the idea that's associated with. We think about Timothy and Paul writing Timothy. And this was some verses that we noted actually this morning when talking about preachers. Of course, this is not restricted to preachers by any means, even though there was some very specific things attached to the preaching portion of it. But this idea that can be applied to the youth and things associated with it. Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to believers in word and conduct and love and spirit and faith and purity, giving attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. So very early on, this idea of a respect for the word of God and wanting to be the right person. And that's how one is an example through this. So here's Timothy and what we see with him and some further things associated with what you look at these verses, because taking, you know, heed to your doctrine. Of course, this is true with all ones that are going to follow the Lord to serve and follow His teaching, instruction, and continue in them. And so doing, of course, again, there's some aspects associated with public proclamation, which is the evangelist, but we all have an influence upon those around about us and wanting to bring them to the Lord and should. And so think about some of the young people and the conversations they've had with some of their friends. And so we're at the very outset there, trying to talk to them and study with them and have an influence upon them for good and the example they set for them. But living right in one's youth is preparation for
serving the Lord throughout life, including when we come to the end of that journey, toward the end of that journey. Be an example to others. Touched upon that. Let's just consider this from the standpoint now of the youth, but now of being older. What kind of example do we set for those around about us when we get to being older? Because just to kind of lay the thought process for us, kind of thinking about what's already been talked about, you slow down. There are things you can't do that you could do in your youth. The vitality of youth, that harness that vitality and help guide that and help to be encouraging of it for those that are younger. But what does the older ones do? Well, you don't retire. That's not the situation. One doesn't retire. Now, things can happen that slows us down, inevitably. There are even things that might preclude us from being able to do other things we would want to do, but we can't do it any longer. And those restrictions might become even greater as the mental portion of it becomes an issue. Those types of circumstances can be found there. But throughout this, we always do everything and should be always doing everything we can to serve the Lord and serve others. And one thing is to be an example. What kind of example do I set? And by doing these things, do I set an example for all around me, including the youth, the people that we want to see continue to serve? Do I set an example that is going to be one that helps and encourages, or is it one that sets an example that discourages and kind of causes, well, if they're like that, well, why should I be otherwise? Now, we're all going to stand ourselves and responsible for our own lives. But that doesn't preclude that part of my responsibility and what I'm going to be judged for by the Lord is what I've done in my conduct, not just early in life, which is certainly what we already talked about, but as my life goes further down the road and these situations arise. When these things are being, do I find ways to be an encouragement, an example to others? Proverbs 16, and again, this is the wise man, Solomon. He has a number of things to say about all, again, periods of time in life, circumstances in life. But here it addresses the idea from the standpoint of the older person, and he's got the gray head. The silver hair is a crown of glory, is found in the way of righteousness. So he's putting this thing, you know, get this point. Well, That becomes a situation there where what is it that my influence could be an example for those around about? In Joshua 14, 6 through 14, I'll let you read the account. Let me just kind of give you what's described there. Because you have this fellow named Caleb. Now, you will recall that Caleb was a person exemplary in conduct and behavior, faithful to the Lord, courageous. Back when he was 40 years of age, he and Joshua, along with the other 10 spies that were sent out at the time, they go and look through the land. The 40 days that they were through there, they come back. And so there's this report that was given. And 10 of the spies says, we can't take the land. It's bountiful. It's plentiful, as the Lord said. It's just a wonderful place, but there's these people there that are powerful, they're mighty, they're giants, they've got fortified cities, they're military people, we can't do it. Well, Caleb spoke up along with Joshua and said, yes, we can, because the Lord will be with us. So he says, the people followed the 10, they were discouraged by that. Of course, you can talk about examples right there as far as that part goes, and who was giving the encouragement that needed to be given, and how did it impact people as a result of the disposition. But so what we find there then is the circumstance in which Caleb, you know, showed his mantle. He showed his fervor for the Lord. Now, when we come to Joshua's time, they've come in, they're conquering the land. And as they're conquering the land and they're doing these things, Caleb goes up to Joshua and says, we're over here now. And that place there has been designated, the place where I came upon during the time of going. The Lord promised me this for my heritage, for my family's heritage. And he says, let me go and take it. You know, he didn't say, send somebody over there to get it. There were those with him, but he says, I'll do this. He was 85 years of age. Now, granted, there were some special circumstances associated with this, the Lord being with him, the vitality that was given. But the principle, I think, is still applicable. As long as one can engage and do things and the desire to accomplish it, he stands out illustratively of that principle. And for us to be influential of those around about us, what do we say to this? What kind of example we set? You know, there are instances and times when we see individuals who struggle mightily with physical things, and they come. And we made this observation before, and especially in light of some of the things that we've had to experience and how they dealt with that. And they said, I want to serve the Lord, and I'm going to be there. And what does it say to us? And we talked about those individuals at times that go through very hard times, and then we kind of think, well, this is kind of a hard situation for me. And we look at them and go, they're doing something that's far more challenging than I'm having to contend with. What a wonderful example of faithful conduct and being able to pursue these things. And what am I setting for those younger ones around me that, hey, the Lord's going to take precedence in my life? We think about 1 Peter 5, verses 1 through 4. And the elders, among the things that's described, and the elders, and of course the qualifications, and that age grouping that you would start to see, and having faithful children that Titus 1 describes, and of course that has to do with the idea then of those that have been obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ, been able to demonstrate the ability of the family overseeing them and being head and directing, is that which is an objective means of seeing how they would do the family of God as far as taking care of the family of God, feeding the church of God. And so, but it says example, and I don't think that's coincidental. Being an example is the opposite of dictatorial. Now they make decisions, but the example that's to be set in order to accomplish the end result. You want people to follow, you be a leader by example in order to see to these things. And you can't do that by going about and putting other things first or addressing these other things or having dispositions that don't set the right example. And this is not a difficult thing to determine. What is the preferable thing? If you look at people and how they react and responded, which one set the example that we want to emphasize? And certainly that, again, even at the very top of the ones that have the responsibilities, setting that example helps with those that are coming behind. Provide wise counsel. So the idea of wise counsel, again, you start looking at some aspects of this. There are things that you can't do physically, and others can do things that can be done. But, with that aging process, if we've developed as we should, and people's knowledge and understanding of God's Word is what it should be, we begin to see that, there are things we can give helpful instruction to give good guidance, thoughtful ways in which people can look at things. And it's based upon the Word of God, obviously. And the wise man, he addresses those things in Proverbs. Proverbs is just a collection of these pithy sayings that are intended to give practical means of living rightly. And so it's done, we see there what the beginning of wisdom is, what knowledge, where it comes from. And just to kind of set the tone, you just start reading the very beginning point of Proverbs, and it explains to you what the objective is. In verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning. A man of understanding will attain wise counsel, to understand a proverb, an enigma, the words of the wise and the riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and a chain about your neck. And of course, it takes it from the standpoint of the parenting portion of it. But that doesn't negate the other point that's equally can be applied from the perspective of counsel and instruction and guidance in life from those that should have had the experience and have done these things that can relate to things in a practical way and help give this beneficial direction in life. In Titus chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, here you have these various categories that are kind of divided up. And of course, you can kind of, I'm sure, you know, you got those categories for simplicity's sake. It talks about the different ones, the older men, and how they're supposed to have their life right. And certainly that would be an example. Rightful behavior leads to being that which is a proper example. And then it talks about older women. And the older women having these attributes as well, and describes that, including what to teach the younger women. And some practical things that have to do with righteous living and raising the family or being in their rightful role. And that's what you find there in Titus. So it talks about then the younger women and as they're guided through these things, how they're to conduct themselves. So it's an aspect of continuing on. Wisdom can be certainly found in every level. People can have understanding, comprehension. People can go to the scriptures and guide that. But if you think about having the experience over life through the time period, that adds to some things that ought to be present and ought to be helpful in recognizing that. Joshua, and of course it talks about the younger men as well, and it actually ties that into the idea of the evangelist in that case. You'll see some other instructions there. But all those categories, what does that mean? Well, you got people in different stages of life, and each having their means and ways of being productive and helpful. But here's some things, no matter how old you become, there's always this, that if you've lived as you should and had these opportunities and you've been the example, then people seeking out that insights that you have can benefit them. And we need to be helpful about that and desirous of giving the encouragement and showing and demonstrating it. In fact, there's some obligation attached to it. And one other point about that is you look and see the people that have been successful, and I'm talking about successful in the way that the Lord describes it. That kind of success and which one's lived. Who is it you seek out for that kind of advice? Well, you look at the people, well, what have they done? And what in their life shows that they've been accomplished. Don't typically go to the ones that have failed. Now, that's not to say that they can't give insights and say, don't make the mistakes I made. And that's a worthwhile thing as well. But when you're really trying to ascertain, what is it that I'm going to be able to look to? I see that they've had success. I'm struggling with this. Who do we go to? Well, those individuals that can give us some help in regard to it. And pick those out just by virtue of the fact that you see the end results. Joshua 24, verse 15. Well-known passage of Scripture in which we, you know, many homes have them in some way that this is framed, this thing about, as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. And it's preceded by the idea of God. I'm going to follow the Lord. I'm going to follow the idols of old or go in this new place, follow these idols. Here's Joshua giving then the counsel. And it's biblical counsel in the sense it's from God. And it's not just arbitrary. It's something that's basic to what needs to be accomplishable and living and serving. And he says, you know, I'm not all going to tell you this. I'm going to do it. It's for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. And is that the disposition that's demonstrable by the instructions we give and by the life we live? And we see the result of that is because in verse 31 of that same chapter, all the days of Joshua that we have here and those elders that follow after him, they were faithful to the Lord. Yeah. It's after that we begin to see them drifting away. What happened? Well, God stopped being a part of what was emphasized. And those people that give counsel to say, we need to follow the Lord, I'm going to stand up regardless of what anybody else does, starts being missing. It's not prominent like it should be. Ready for physical death. And that brings us to the ultimate consequence of what we're describing here. What's the end result? Death. And that's what's noted here. I'm going to end with Ecclesiastes 12 in just a moment. That's not on the board. But it's the summation of what we see in Ecclesiastes about all the things we've been talking about and describing. But before that, we think about over in Hebrews, the 11th chapter. There are a number of things in Hebrews chapter 11 about these individuals of faith. And we can look at several passages that kind of give us some insights. But one that I want to take note of specifically in this case, that you find in Hebrews chapter 11, are those verses 21 and 22. Because there in verses 21 and 22, by faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph in worship, leaning on the top of his staff. By faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. See, right at the end, what were these ones doing? Well, they were still engaged to the extent they could be, and they're making preparation that's associated with it, where they were looking at what was in worshiping, even at toward the end, leaning on a staff, blessing the children. Of course, the blessings of the patriarchs had a special meaning. But of course, we want to give helpful instruction to our children. We want the children to live rightly after we're gone. And we want those that were in the Lord's church to continue faithfully when we're no longer around. And it's not coincidental whether or not that's going to take place. It's going to depend on us doing our part. And minimally, if we do our part, they're still responsible for their own conduct. But if I don't do my part to try to ensure that this is what's being done, I'm going to be accountable for that. And so Joseph's dying, and he believes the Lord's promises, and he says, take my bones with you. Which didn't happen until much later when we go to the book of Exodus. When you go to 2 Peter, and there we notice in 2 Peter, in the first chapter, and beginning in verse 13, where Peter says, yes, I think it's right, as long as I'm in this tent, to stir you up by reminding you, knowing that shortly I must put off my tent, just as our Lord Jesus Christ showed me. Moreover, I will be careful to ensure that you always have a reminder of these things after my decease. Prepared for physical death, for our own situation, but also the idea of I'm preparing it by acknowledging that what was my place and what was I doing in regard to these things. 2 Timothy 4, 6 through 8, which very, again, familiar passage where Paul, kind of echoing in some respects, but one that I think we probably are more familiar than with in that 2 Peter 1 reference that Peter set forth. But here, as Paul is about to die, he talks about his life and the proper pursuits that were needed, and how he emphasized the service and what he did in order to come to that point in life. And all those years in which he engaged in fulfilling his obligation to the Lord. And this particularly emphasizes, of course, when he obeyed the Lord and then the apostleship that's set forth there. But notice what's stated in the verse 8, there in verse 2 Timothy, verse there 4, beginning of verse 6. For I'm already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I fought the good fight, I finished the course, I've kept the faith. Finally, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me in that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. He talks about his life, and he talks about his life in terms of serving and going about accomplishing the task that was given to him and going to honor the Lord. And there's this crown of righteousness, and it's not exclusive to him. There's a mentality that says, we love his appearing. What is that? We're preparing for that. Our emphasis is upon being ready and prepared, and therefore we can look with anticipation and not fear of physical death. And that separates Christians from the world. Serving the Lord faithfully like that, death is inevitable, and it prepares us for that inevitability in a way that brings honor and glory to the Lord. And as we think about our lives, what we've done in that service and honor and glorifying Him. And I said I'm going to end with Ecclesiastes 12 because we go back and it said there's some kind of disheartening aspects of Ecclesiastes until you come to the very conclusion. And all the vanities and emptiness and when it says grasping for the wind, these phrases that are found therein, he finds the meaning of life. Now, Solomon, I'm persuaded, knew the meaning of it, but he's going to note it in perhaps over the time period, especially when there was these instances in his life when he faltered, fell short, and did so at times when he should have known better, but he allowed himself to be guided away. But he's going to give us some helpful instruction, and again, by inspiration. So what's the really important thing of life? What is life all about? What's the meaning of life? Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Again, that's not a frightening proposition for the Christian. And certainly we want to do everything we can to be prepared ourselves and to help others be prepared for physical death or when the Lord comes again, whichever takes place first, but us being prepared and ready. And older people have an obligation, responsibility. You can't just ignore that obligation. And to encourage the young to continue to serve the Lord and find ways to help them in regard to that. Because he said to the youth, remember the Lord in the days, God in the days of your youth. So we're all in it together. We all have obligations and duties. Well, we're about to sing a song of encouragement. I trust this has been a helpful lesson. That was the objective. Make us think about the situation, circumstances of life, and how we can go about being prepared and helping others. And certainly, if you stand in need in any way of the Lord's invitation, we invite you and encourage you to come forward and make that request known as together we stand and sing.